Myself. First noticed the persistent contrails when I was living in Florida. And for me, it was an intriguing event because I saw this large X in the sky, and it was just there hanging. And growing up in Orlando, Florida, we get to see rocket launches quite often there at Cape Canaveral. And so this was the only thing that I had ever seen before of that type of trail I saw. But of course, now I've watched many rocket launches with the Apollo and Saturn, and then later the space shuttle launches there in Cape Canaveral. And these, of course, leave a much bigger trail than these persistent contrails that we're seeing from the jets. And I would believe have seen a great many of them this week. So when I saw these two trails making a crisscross there in the middle of the sky, I personally thought, well, maybe World War III had begun, and that these were missile trails that I was looking at. But as we got deeper and deeper into this, I started to find that there were a lot of people talking about it. Of course, it wasn't reaching mainstream news, and a great many of us prior to knowing what this was, we're waiting to see them show up in movies and commercials and whatnot. And we would get very excited when we'd actually finally see one on a movie or something and say, look, there's a trail. So this was not something that I was used to. All my life I've been watching, and of course the sun was completely different when I was a child. It is much more radiant these days. And these trails did not exist. Actually, in Florida, we hardly had any clouds at all, believe it or not. We would get our little rain showers, but there wasn't like there is today. It seems that perhaps a massive amount of pollution is causing more and more clouds, but these persistent contrails were something completely different. You look outside and you see that you've got these grid patterns in the sky or the X's, and we of course were really curious as to what these were. Okay, so the chemtrails have been shown to have a number of very nefarious ingredients. That is Roslyn Peterson from CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. Welcome to the show. This is Roslyn Peterson from California SkyWatch. And Roslyn, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get this going?
Okay. I was born and raised on a working farm in Northern California. And I've spent my whole life in agriculture. I've worked for the Mendocino County Agricultural Department in Northern California. Also, I have worked for the USDA Farm Service Agency for many years, including time as a crop loss adjuster.
A what?
An agricultural crop loss adjuster, which meant that I traveled across the across the state of California, going to wherever there was crop losses. And determining the cause of those crop losses in the 1990s and late 1980s.
I see. Okay, well, I bet that has increased quite a bit.
Well, no, I'm retired from that profession at the present time, but I've started to work on trying to find out about experimental weather modification programs that are impacting our climate and disrupting agricultural crop production across the United States. What I wanted to say was that I've been involved in agriculture my entire life, and one of the things as an agricultural crop loss adjuster for the United States Department of Agriculture in California is that one of my jobs was to ascertain why there were crop losses. And one of the things that is concerning me right now is that we are in a process right now of altering our weather with experimental weather modifications, especially in the western states. NOAA lists about 50 of them that are ongoing in places like California, Arizona, Nevada, some parts of Texas. Wyoming is a big one. There's a lot of programs going on where they're modifying the weather in square miles, 10,000 plus square miles. They modify the weather. Private companies can modify your weather. States can modify your weather. Government agencies can modify your weather, and they list them in these programs. The only one that they don't list is military and atmospheric heating and testing programs. These weather modification programs are listed, and they comprise ground-based applications of chemicals to alter your weather and aerial-based applications of chemicals to change your weather. And what happens and why I'm concerned is because all of these weather modification programs alter microclimates, and they can put some states or counties into drought, and in other places they can benefit by putting higher snowpacks in some areas, more rainfall in some areas, and they can cause droughts. And when they disrupt agricultural growing seasons, this is where I object, because we depend on agriculture for our food supply. We depend, and farmers depend on, and ranchers depend on grasses to grow, We depend on a certain amount of rainfall during certain types of year. We depend on climate. So now the United States Senate Bill 517, which was introduced in Congress in the U.S. Senate, and House Bill 2995, which was introduced into the United States House of Representatives, could pass or may pass sometime early next year. And these two bills, they're both the same, but one's a Senate bill and one's a House bill, they could change your weather. And they're going to be allowed, people are going to be allowed to experiment on your weather, to have a national weather modification policy. The problem with these types of bills, and these two in particular, is there's no agriculture oversight, there's no public oversight. It allows our government to establish a policy and then to implement this policy to experiment on our weather without us having any say. The public can't say, and we're not going to be told in advance of what programs are going to be impacting us and in what states. And I can give you one example of a weather modification program that was done in Wyoming in December 2005 and January 2006, and it was successful. They put more snow in the Wyoming mountains than ever before in recorded history. However, the end result of this program was to put other counties in Wyoming in drought and surrounding states in a drought condition. And I'm really believing that some of the forest fires in Texas and Oklahoma and some other states are caused because we're experimenting with our weather and we're modifying the weather to put certain types of, in other words, snowpack in one area to the detriment of another, put rainfall in one area to the detriment of another. And this is unacceptable because for agriculture to thrive and to be productive across the United States, we can't be at whim modifying the weather. The other issue is that your insurance companies, private companies can modify your weather. And insurance companies do it all the time because they don't want to pay insurance claims. But when they change the weather in one place, they're going to impact it negatively somewhere else. And that's what we're seeing, and that's why we're having some reasons, I believe, that we're having a disruptive agricultural seasons, in other words, where we have drought when we shouldn't, where we have too warm a weather where we shouldn't. And this is one of the problems that I'm having with this weather modification program. So I encourage everyone to contact your local representative to talk about these weather modification bills, and if they're introduced next year especially, to begin to say we want oversight and we don't want our weather experimented upon until we have a voice to say yes or no.
You know, I personally have been subjected to this type of weather modification that you're talking about. I myself, now these are very important, and I understand that the insurance companies and Enron are all making money off the gas and the insurance rates. But there are other things going with. I myself am a member of the Rainbow Family, and I go out into the National Forest every summer, and I live with 30,000 hippies as we create a community out in the woods. And we are classified as a terrorist group because we are non-governmental. And out there, and many people won't believe this, but when we were out setting up the Rainbow Gathering during the first 2 weeks, we got hit with a massive blizzard. Now, let me tell you, this is June 16th in Utah. And I'm standing out there on a 95-degree day, walking through the woods for my first time because we had been trapped in a blizzard, and all of a sudden now it was 95 degrees, and we walked outside and went into the woods and got hit with this massive blizzard and hailstorm out of nowhere in 95-degree weather, and we were trapped out there not knowing where to go. It was a complete whiteout. Now, I feel that they've been training on us with these technologies because, like I say, Rainbow is classified as a terrorist organization, so under the new laws, we're fair game.
Do you know of any other types of manipulations that might be that strong? I thought I had heard about Iraqi forces getting hit with blizzards. Do you know of any things of that type?
I don't know of anything in specific because it's very hard to tell who's doing what. So I wouldn't know about specific incidences other than those listed by NOAA under public record documents. But I can tell you that we do have persistent jet contrails, which are changing our weather over California, Northern California, Southern California. I talk to people around the world, and I do know that these jets are changing our weather. They're changing microclimates as well, and NASA lists them in a newsletter, October 2005, as exacerbating global warming, impacting natural resources. And what happens is that we've got these persistent jet contrails, which are now showing up, and NASA has admitted that they make man-made clouds, which change the climate. So we know that there has to be some experiments going on in changing our climate, and this is one of them, these persistent contrails. And when they change our climate, they can raise temperature at night. They can lower temperature during the day. They can keep us covered over with man-made clouds, cirrus clouds, white haze, any number of different types of clouds. And these change our weather, and they impact agriculture in a very negative way. So I think that we're under a lot of different types of experiments, and this is just one of them. In addition, besides what the jets are doing, we have atmospheric heating and testing programs, which can also negatively impact our weather. And that's another issue that is really awful for us, is the impact of these programs and the chemicals that they use in these programs. Some of the NASA programs, the CRES, C-R-R-E-S, and the night clouds that they create by putting up canisters at different heights in the atmosphere, superheating them, and they put chemicals in like barium. They put aluminum in. They now put strontium.
A lot of people don't know this, and I want to throw this out because I seem to be one of the few people discussing this, but barium is a well-known used tracking device that they use on Al-Qaeda or other terrorist organizations. They will feed barium to them, and we show up on what is known as an X radar. And for me, I believe that this barium, one of the main things that they would be using it for is in a martial law type scenario, we will all show up on this X radar. Now, the X radar was being shipped from here in Texas. It was sent down through the Gulf on an oil rig and had to make the whole circuit around South America in order to get up to Alaska. And I found it very interesting that it was going right up there near the HAARP facility. But the barium factor hasn't been covered very much. But barium also causes some very ill effects. Do you know of these?
Yes, it does have, yes, it causes hypertension. There's a whole listing on the EPA website for barium. All you have to do is go to the EPA website, go into the chemical section, and what you will find is a whole listing of all the chemicals that water districts across the United States are supposed to test for, and it gives the levels that are allowable in water, and it gives listings on the health effects for aluminum, barium, strontium is also another one that they're using, lithium is another chemical that's being used in these atmospheric testing. I can speak to the atmospheric testing programs and these heating programs because I know more about them than some of the other issues, and I have the government documents to back up what I'm talking about on these issues. So I hope that people will research this. The NASA Press Kit, C-R-R-E-S, for 1990 is a good one because it explains what chemicals and actually how they do the process. And that's on the Internet. People can look it up. NASA has another program called Night Clouds, TMA testing, trimethyl aluminum testing. So these are things that I can talk about, and once they put these chemicals up into the atmosphere and do their tests, then part of what comes down will these chemicals will come down and start to contaminate food supplies, soils, that will impact trees negatively, water supplies. Your cattle are going to eat them. Grasses will be impacted with these chemicals. And one of the things that aluminum, as an example, does is it harms trees. So if you're seeing unusual tree deaths where your trees look like they're dying or they look like they're kind of strangling to death, they're not healthy because they don't have enough water, part of that problem is that when you have acid rain, which our rain is becoming more acidic, and you add aluminum to the soil, the root systems of trees will uptake this aluminum, and when they do, what it does is it causes the trees to be strangled. They don't get the nutrients they need, and they don't get the water. And so a lot of times when they talk about we're in a drought here in Northern California, and that's why our trees don't look good, they're not taking into consideration the amount of aluminum that we're getting from some of these programs, and that the trees, we searched records 100 years back, found that there was no significant drought here. But the trees were dying, and they looked like they were dying of drought. But we believe fully that aluminum is a big cause here of why the trees don't look so good. So this could be happening in many areas across the United States because we're seeing tree impacts. Even in Arizona with the cactus, we're seeing it in different parts of the United States where people are calling in and letting us know that tree health is declining as well.
Well, so, one story I'd like to share with you, when I lived in Kansas City back in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, and this was a news story that got very little airplay. Actually, they only gave it about 2 minutes after, and then gave about a 10-minute clip on the dangers of the squirrel. But in this news clip in Kansas City, thousands of birds dropped dead over Kansas City and were lying dead and flopping in the park. And the news came out there, and they showed a bunch of people going, oh, yeah, this is really disgusting, all these dead birds. Then they had their specialist come on and say, well, I don't really know what it is. It might be poisoning. But this just dropped right like a bomb and just floated right out like a feather. Here were thousands of birds dropping dead in Kansas City, and no one questioning why.
And they did the same thing here in one of the biggest lakes in California, in Lake County. All of a sudden, Fish and Game was pulling out thousands of dead birds who were just flying along and then all of a sudden dropped from the sky, still warm. They just dropped straight down and fell into the lake. And I'll tell you, they didn't want to talk about that issue either. They pulled them out of the lake, still warm, as fast as they could, and disposed of them immediately. But they couldn't tell me that it was bird flu that would knock whole, in other words, thousands of birds out of the sky at one time. This was in the some of the local newspapers here in Lake County. So what I want you to know is this is not uncommon. But okay, it's not being talked about as to why what's causing this or why.
You're the first person to tell me another story about that. I hadn't heard anyone else. I'm so glad. Well, I'm not glad that it's happening, but I'm glad to hear that, you know, you are aware of this.
Yes, and we hear other stories similar. One of the persons that's really an expert on this and also is Bridget Conroy. She's in Phoenix, Arizona, and her telephone number is 602-404-0847. And she is one half of the Agricultural Defense Coalition, which we formed in order to bring attention to the impacts on agriculture. And she knows a lot about species death and bird death because she's been studying this since 1998, knows a lot more about it than I do. So feel free to contact her, and she's going to put up a new website soon called Arizona Skywatch. And so we don't know quite when it'll be online, but we're working on it she's working on it right now. So I can tell you that we're moving forward on some of these issues to find out what really is happening and how it's impacting wildlife as well as human life.
This has been at least a decade. How far back does your research go? Or how long have you been aware, and how long?
Because I started in 2002. I found out about this about April of that year, and since that time I've devoted a good portion of my life to working on this project and trying to do the research and figure out what has been going on with the jets and the persistent jet contrails, why our weather is changing. I wanted to know why the weathermen don't want to talk about weather reports about persistent jet contrails, which change our weather and disrupt even their ability to predict the weather. Sometimes yes. They're so far off, it's ridiculous, because yeah. They never look up outside and can tell that there isn't a weather front coming in. The jets have come by and turned our whole sky into either white haze, or they've turned it into these man-made cirrus or other type clouds.
Now, have you gotten any close-up photos of these jets? Everybody's curious as to who is doing this.
Yes, we've gotten photos close up and from a distance, and most of the jets that are leaving persistent contrails are white or silver and look unmarked. Most of the time you can tell when commercial airlines are flying because they have colors and they have numbers on them. They have to be identifiable, but the jets that are leaving most of the persistent contrails in our area do loop-the-loops. They go out over the Pacific and fly back in, or you can stand at a local supermarket and film them one, two, or three at a time, making oval-shaped loops, leaving persistent contrails. The airlines don't have the money or the fuel. It's too expensive, and they're on a schedule, flight schedule. So none of the airlines would be doing loop-the-loops around our county or other counties in other places. A man called me from Austin to tell me that there were about 10 jets running over you.
Yes.
Day and night pretty consistently recently.
Oh, I felt everything. Upper respiratory infection, chronic fatigue, irritability, difficulty concentrating, muscle anomalies, all of it. All week long I've had this horrible cough.
Many people talk about having respiratory problems when the jets blitz us at different parts of the country. All of a sudden you'll have a wave of respiratory problems. Two things. Jet fuel emissions are highly toxic. They also reduce beneficial ozone in the atmosphere. But the fuel itself is highly toxic. And then when we're blitzed, a lot of respiratory problems, nosebleeds, other health problems show up. I list that on my website, which is californiaskywatch.com. Anyone can go there, and there's health effects also listed there. So, but the thing is that asthma increases. There's all kinds of things that are happening in areas where we have no relative pollution, like in Mendocino County, because we're 30 air miles from the Pacific Ocean, and we don't have an industrial base here. So to say that it's industry is a stretch, and yet I've been teaching tennis here for over 30 years, and I can tell you that in the last 10 years I've never seen so many children with respiratory problems, asthma, needing inhalers. It's just amazing. As far as the research, Bridget in Arizona has been researching the subject since 1998, and my research, as I said, started in 2002. The earliest pictures outdoors that I can find that show a persistent jet contrail or any type of contrail in our county go back to about 1990. Prior to that, we had deep, clear blue skies, wonderful weather, low humidity. The weather was always great. It came in, it rained, the clouds looked normal, and then the clouds would clear off after a rain, and our weather was spectacular.
Yes.
But that's not true anymore. And as we went from the 1990s, I researched my pictures and began to find more and more people in our county talking about seeing the persistent contrails, with that increasing asthma and other health effects. And also what happens is that the contrails have changed over the last few years into about 16 varying types. And I invented a poster with the help of Bridget.
We do have that on the screen right now.
Oh, good. Well, this one of the posters that I have shows trees, tree health decline. And the poster has a listing of a contrail index. And it shows the different types of contrails that we are finding here in Northern California. And some of them persist for long periods of time. I can email to anyone who wants a copy. I can email you the posters so that you can see them and use them. But as you can see from the pictures that you have up on your screen there, there are different types and different persistent levels. So you have black contrails where a jet will leave a black plume, and then that will dissipate over time or increase in size depending on what's being used. You have bursts where you have a contrail, and then all of a sudden you'll have an enormous burst, and they'll get huge in the sky over time. You have mushroom trails in the center of the screen. The mushroom trails have this rough edge on one side, and those are the ones that will persist for hours at a time. And the pictures on the poster show what they look like as they persist. But our skies on a pretty consistent basis look like what you're seeing on these posters that are up. So I want you to know that in the early history of this county, and I was born and raised here, I would have noticed. There's no pictures going back to when I was a young child that showed anything in our skies that looked like this, and we took a lot of outdoor pictures. There's nothing in our skies in the 70s or in the 80s. But I can tell you that the funding for the atmospheric heating and testing programs, the funding for some of the experiments that are being done, all seem to appear around the 1985, 1987. And this is when our climate began to dramatically change, was around 1987. We began to have weather modification, and the fires began to burn hotter than ever before in the late 80s. Never in the history of forest fires have we ever seen forest fires burn so hot and burn so high. And part of it, I believe, is that when we start adding atmospheric chemicals, and especially those that are flammable, that these chemicals get on the ground, they get on the trees, they impair tree health. And then what happens is that when these chemicals come down and there's a fire, it causes these fires to burn hotter and higher. Even programs I've read about forest fires and seen on television, they can't explain this big change. But I think we have to look at the use of atmospheric chemicals, and maybe that's one of the reasons that we burn differently than ever before. And higher and hotter. It's amazing the difference in the temperature between prior to the 1980s, five, and after 1988. The change is immense.
Well, you know, one thing, I'm an avid sun watcher, and I'm a big fan of the SOHO satellite. And I was very intrigued by Solar Cycle 23, which came up there in the mid-90s. And then was 300 times what any of the scientists had predicted it would be. The solar flare cycle that we are currently in has just been massive and has not gotten any reports. When I would watch the solar sun, the solar observatory satellite, I could predict the weather early on in the solar storm. Once the flares got so many that I couldn't keep track. I could actually predict the weather by watching these solar flares, because they would cause massive superstorms if they actually struck the planet, like one struck us in 99 of December, and Paris and New Zealand were laid flat with 180-mile-an-hour winds. Yesterday, we had an X-class solar flare. It didn't seem to strike the planet. I didn't get a chance to check that, but there weren't any reports of the superstorms. But I wonder if the solar flares might also be a part of this, because every time I would report a storm coming from the solar flare, the news would report El Nino. And I found that highly suspicious, and couldn't figure out why anyone wasn't, you know, in the 70s when the solar flare storm hit, it was big news. But when this, and this one was way beyond what any of the scientists were predicting was going to occur. So I tried correlating perhaps the persistent contrails along with the solar flare activity, and I actually found an opposite effect going on where there were no persistent contrails on the days that there were solar flares. And so that eliminated the solar screen theory for me.
I don't know, because I haven't studied that issue. There's too many issues involved.
It is a dynamic problem we're looking at.
Yes, I think so. But I can say that we used to have these beautiful, clear, deep blue skies here, and I can tell you right now that they are few and far between. The jets stay up and keep us in a white haze. Senator Murkowski, in a Senate hearing on the confirmation of Leavitt when he was being approved for the EPA, head of the EPA, was demanding that he find out why Alaska was in a white haze all the time. And she had been trying to find out for some time and had been ignored. And I'm standing here in California and going, well, that's the same white haze that we're having in California. And I thought to myself, wow, I wonder if she ever got an answer. I doubt it, but I wonder if she ever got an answer, because I'd sure like to know what the white haze is here also. So that's part of it. The other issue is the geoengineering projects. And for those who don't know what geoengineering is, it's a science whereby scientists are working on programs that would put chemicals or particles into the atmosphere to negate the impact of global warming or climate change, you know, the heating that we're going through. And so what happens is that they met in a secret meeting 2 weekends ago.
Really?
And, yes, on the 18th and 19th of November. And on the 20th at Stanford University, there was a four-hour public discussion that was regarding these geoengineering projects. And it came to light there that NASA wanted to keep these projects a secret and their discussion a secret. It also came to light that this had been under discussion for years, but that they had agreed to kind of not publicize it because, in my belief, the public might object to having their atmosphere geoengineered with things like sulfur, which is one of the items under discussion, or putting up particles to reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth. And the questions that came up at this meeting were that the consensus of opinion of these scientists, a few who were named, but most of them that were at the meeting on Monday, the rest of them weren't named because they didn't talk about who was there. But the consensus of opinion of these scientists seemed to be that they were ready to start experimenting, that it was time, that they were going to be the saviors of our planet from global warming, and that they wanted to start experimenting at this particular juncture in time. But the problem is that if you take sulfur, for example, which they're doing in 2006 out of diesel fuel in California because it's a health hazard, now they're talking about putting sulfur in the atmosphere to cut down global warming by not having so much sunlight reaching the Earth. I think this is problematic because these chemicals are toxic to trees and agricultural plants.
And people.
And also, well, that's why they're taking it out of diesel fuel in California. So why would you take it out of one place and then put it into the atmosphere somewhere else or over us? And it was
sense.
An odd state of a discussion about these geoengineering plans, because they want to kind of stampede us into thinking we have to do something immediately, and the plans to put something, some chemical or particle in the atmosphere is going to save us. Instead of reducing the pollution on the ground, they want to put these chemicals up and experiment. And I was on NBC TV, Burbank, California, Channel 4 television. Wonderful program, and anybody can see the clip that Paul Moyer did. It was great, but he talked to Professor Gregory Benford. And on that, Professor Benford was talking about how you can take barium and make clouds and put them where you want them to do what you want them to do. And he was so, and he says, well, you put a little barium and a little aluminum, it won't hurt anybody, and you can make these fluffy clouds, etc. Well, how would he know that unless they were doing the experiments? And this is what we know about these atmospheric heating and testing programs. They're already experimenting. So I think that we need to get control of our government and find out how this is going to impact agriculture. And a question at the meeting with these geoengineering scientists was, well, what about agriculture? What impact will you have when you do this geoengineering with chemicals or particles in the atmosphere? And that was not a question that was taken kindly, because they didn't want to talk about that, because they knew that that would bring in people who would say, well, what's going on? How's this going to impact? And I'm saying, well, this is our food supply. If you're going to do something to our atmosphere, you could impact our food supply. And we already know from University of Illinois corn crop studies that corn crop production is reduced when you have increased cloudiness. And when you have direct sunlight, photosynthesis can take place, and it increases corn crop production. Well, if we want to put in these alternate fuels, we can't afford to be reducing sunlight hitting the earth. And even now, the reduction, they talk about global dimming, and rickets is on the rise in the United States. The CDC talks about rickets being on the rise. It's a bone disease, and what happens is that it makes weak bones and brittle bones. And children in the United States had not been diagnosed with rickets since the time that they were taken out of slave labor in the coal mines. And now this lack of vitamin D is showing up in children in California. Kaiser talks about it. UC Berkeley talks about it. Children's Hospital is talking about it, the CDC. And the rise started about the same time in the late 1980s, as we started doing the jet contrails where they persisted, and some other experiments. And I'm wondering if this is related.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit. You know, I get to talk to my little old mom in Florida every now and again, and she's 77 years old out there, and now she's out talking about the persistent contrails. And she says that when she sits down, the pain is just so bad, and then having to move. And this wasn't something that she was suffering from before, and she doesn't believe is due to her age, but because of these chemicals being put into our bodies. I myself, at 40, am also feeling some serious joint problems, especially on the days that the trails are heavy. Not to mention the lethargy. I really get lethargic when these trails are heavy.
Yes, many people talk about the lethargy, the inability to concentrate. They will talk about short-term memory loss, inability to focus, joint pains. There's a whole group of maladies, but I think part of it, too, is that they're doing some other types of atmospheric testing, especially military testing, and I think that could also be impacting us as well.
Are you talking about electromagnetic frequencies or chemicals?
One or both, or combined. I'm not sure, because I have to look at each of these programs separately and individually. But I do know that they're doing electromagnetic weapons testing in the United States. They put them on jets, these big B-52 jets. I know that they're experimenting, because Mr. Beeson, who wrote the E-bomb, it's the letter E-BOMB, is looking for more money for electromagnetic weapons testing. And apparently we've done some experimenting in Afghanistan. We've used it in Afghanistan, and we're going to be using, according to him, I mean, this, I'm quoting him at this point, but he wants more funding to be able to do more of this. So the book is scary. It was on C-SPAN, if anybody's interested, in October 2005. There's a little over an hour program in the book review that you might be able to still find and bring up and see. But this is an interesting thing about what the plan is for these electromagnetic weapons. And we don't know their impact on human health. We have no idea, although there have been some negative reports that I have. But we don't know what the full consequences are. So there's many programs that are ongoing that are atmospheric, that are being done by the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, the Air Force, the military, NOAA, NASA, university programs, private programs. There's no control, and there's no public oversight on any of these. And when we talk about global warming and climate change, what happens is that people want to look at this big fix, you know, have a geoengineering fix. But even in Al Gore's book, he doesn't discuss that the jets are one of the major pollutants. Even water vapor is a greenhouse gas. So if you say jet contrails are just made up of ice crystals and water vapor is a greenhouse gas. And NASA says you can fly jets at heights that don't leave persistent contrails, which would stop producing so much climate change and warming us. Jet contrails are beginning to impact agriculture here in the state of California because when they fly over and they keep us in cloud cover, they raise nighttime temperature, and so we don't get enough freezing nights to set the fruit crops for grapes, apples, pears, plums. And if you don't get so many freezing hours of temperature during the winter months, you won't have a crop the following year. And then if you don't get freezing temperatures, it doesn't control bark beetles and other pests that and molds and mildews and fungus that would normally be kept in control by these low temperatures. During the day, for example, in Mendocino County, it's very easy to rise to over 100 degree temperature, but our humidity is very low. It'll be in the low 20s, 15, 20, 10, in that range. But when the jets come through and cover us over on a summer day, we don't get to above 100. We stay at about 70 or 80 degrees. We can have a 30-degree temperature drop, which makes the weathermen look bad because they were predicting it to be hot. The humidity goes up, and then we get a lot of growth in molds and mildew. Sometimes I think it's like we live in a southern state. The humidity is 93%.
Yes.
Unheard of in this community that I live in because we normally have, when I went back through historical records, a more desert-like quality to our county versus one, except on the very coast, but more desert-like quality to our air and humidity and things like this. So the change in temperature, the change in climate produced by the jets is impacting the health of our trees as well, and probably in other areas too.
Well, I travel a lot, and last summer, or last February, actually, I was in Tucson, Arizona, and the events that I travel to generally bring 30,000 to 50,000 people, say like the Gem and Mineral Show in Tucson. Now, the persistent contrails over Tucson for the Gem and Mineral Show continued steadily to increase. Now, I was there a couple weeks early, so there weren't any trails to begin with until the people started to show up. And then as more and more people, until the very major day, the Saturday event of the Gem and Mineral Show, the trails were so heavy that it actually began to rain. And Tucson had not had rain in the last 5 months prior to that Saturday. Now, it only missed it. It just came down, but that was the only rain Tucson saw in 6 months. And I feel it was due to these persistent contrails. And I also feel that these persistent contrails were directed at these 50,000 world travelers, because the Gem and Mineral Show brings people from all over the world. And I have a database of these events because I go to concerts or the Gem and Mineral Shows or other things around the country. And I always notice an increase of trail activity over these large groups. Here in Austin, they had the Rolling Stones concert. I didn't go to it, but I was watching everyone walk through these massive trails as in, you know, just completely oblivious of everything going on around them except for the concert. And I can consistently say that everywhere I have gone and there were 30,000 people gathered, the trails were there as well. And one good one is out at the Rainbow Gathering where there are no other people because we go 5 miles deep into the National Forest. And then there will be, of course, no trails whatsoever until the very day that the rainbow actually begins, which is July 1st. All of a sudden, there's the grid pattern. So I personally believe that these trails are directed at population centers, and that should be questioned.
Well, they're over San Francisco. When I was in Los Angeles on the 23rd of March for a rally that we held here about Senate Bill 517, the day we came in on the 22nd, it was blitzed. I never saw so many trails all over the place, right over downtown Los Angeles. So I know that I have video film of the jets over San Francisco, much too low for takeoffs and landing of normal commercial jets, but you can see these big jets and they're leaving these huge plumes over San Francisco. This is quite common as well. So I don't think it has anything to do with whether it's a population center or not, but I can tell you something interesting. If you ever take note of the big air shows when the Blue Angels fly and the Air Force is going to fly or they're practicing, uh-huh. or air shows when people are going to be looking up, all of a sudden around here, your sky, or they'll have the, you know, the Navy's out over San Francisco Bay or something, all of a sudden people are looking up. Boy, I'll tell you, skies clear up. There's not a jet in sight leaving a persistent contrail. And I think, well, commercial airlines didn't stop flying that day, but certainly with everybody looking up, they certainly aren't advertising these persistent contrails on days when people are really going to be looking up and would see them.
Now, that's interesting.
So even the local air show in Santa Rosa, California, which is a smaller community about 50 miles north of San Francisco, when that community has an air show, no jets. Leaving persistent contrails show up.
Amazing.
Now, why would that be? How can, and it's been consistent for several years, why all of a sudden when there's an air show do you have no persistent contrails? The other thing is that when the first flight of the, or one of the flights of the space shuttle when it crashed during that tragic event when it landed in Texas.
Yes.
The previous week before that flight came down, we were blitzed here terribly. Contrails, people were talking to me all week long about how bad the skies were and how many jets were going every direction. We had circles, crisscrosses, zigzags, ovals. It was amazing. And I was out teaching tennis the morning of the crash, and I looked up at the sky, and it was awful. And then during the time frame, the shuttle crashed, and all of a sudden, every jet stopped. There wasn't a jet leaving a single solitary persistent contrail of any type in the sky. The sky cleared up. It got sunny and stayed clear for an entire week. Now, I don't think that this is coincidental by any stretch. I think that they needed to see the pickup pieces. I think that they needed it for GPS positioning. And all of a sudden, we clear up for a whole week.
Right.
That was just amazing because no commercial airlines all of a sudden stopped flying that particular day. Or for that week. And all of a sudden, no contrails. It was quite an amazing, it was amazing over our county. And I was kind of watching the weather across the United States. And other people that I knew were telling me that it had cleared up and there were no jets. And so even though I know that this was a terrible tragedy, I also know that the jets stopped leaving persistent contrails, but no commercial airlines, of course, stopped flying. So
right.
That's one of the reasons that I suspect that there's more to this than just people thinking it's just increased commercial airline traffic.
You better believe that. And, Rosalind, we have run out of time.
Okay. Can I leave some information for people to contact me?
Absolutely.
Okay. Rosalind Peterson, and I'm at Post Office Box 499, Redwood Valley, California, 95470. My email is info@CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. My website is CaliforniaSkyWatch.com, and my telephone number is 707-485-7520. And also, if you'd like to contact Bridget Conroy in Phoenix, Arizona, her number is 602-404-0847.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Rosalind, for coming on.
I hope that we can do this again.
Okay.
I hope we hit them with a lot of hard-hitting facts here. So if you're not getting enough of this, then we'll definitely get Rosalind back, and because I've got all of the information here for Austin, and I want to get that all gathered, and we can discuss that. And then next week, we're going to have Scott Stevens of Weather Wars on the Freeman Perspective. So you folks have a wonderful night. Keep looking up. Keep asking questions, because we need to do something about this.
Lines in the sky. Oh me, oh my. Can't be denied. Kiss your dreams goodbye. Oily clouds high. Across the sun fly. Some kind of tie to the big lie. Maybe to smother lovers or to cover for UFOs. Maybe for microwave attacks or holographic shows. But the people down below don't seem to want to know about the sky. Lines in the sky.
I should have gone ahead and just worn the gas mask.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was from the house of love. I saw a film today, oh boy. The English army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away. But I just had to look, having read. Seconds flat.
nobody spoke, and I went into a dream.
So